Committee, Governor Governor Affairs will come to order and Senator Cook will move to House Bill 2521, move to vote on the new pass recommendation. Discussion? Tony, that's the one that, that's the one where county commissioners are personally liable, they spend more than the amount of money they need from taxes. They get federal revenue sharing, various other money, from other sources. So they spend more than the amount they get in tax, but they're going to be personally liable. They do it all the time.
And we're repealing, right?
We're repealing.
Did you amend the bill?
No.
Well, they make so much money, I think they ought to be half responsible anyway.
Didn't you get my amendment for triple damages?
Harvey, we need to look at the little of horsey route.
Chairman, I'm interested in having amendments that would pertain to the property tax levy only. So they can spend all the federal money they want. Just have the major front supply of property tax.
Well, counties could pass a sales tax, a home rule county could, or income tax, or anything you want, and they hold on people. And if you have that restriction on here, there'd be no flexibility. Maybe that puts your attention.
I think maybe Tony has a point. The bill could probably solve the problem. There's maybe more than solve the problem, maybe create a I don't know why it should be limited to counties with 50,000 inhabitants. If it's good for one, it ought to be good for everybody. Right?
Yeah, the county.
I see. The county is
probably not as well as 50,000 inhabitants. Or maybe the very
county. Well, this only applies to counties with 50,000.
Or more. But it's one of the counties.
That's most of them.
No, it isn't. No, it isn't. I'll take that bet right now.
Well, maybe we ought to look at it a little more, Chairman, and just get to the problem that's claimed, and I think maybe Tony has a good point.
Well, you have to do that. Did you testify on this?
Yes, I did.
You want to
just... Yeah, that's the topic there.
I don't think there is one. This kind of came on.
No, yes, there is.
Bud Kramer, Multnomah County. This was a bill, there is a law that was enacted in 1903 when the county's sole source of revenue was the property tax levy. Now, the county's property tax levy accounts for less than half of its expenditures. In fact, approximately, this year in Multnomah County, it's approximately a third of the money spent in Multnomah County come from the annual levy. This repealing this does not change the levy in any way. We still have the limitation of our annual levy plus the allowable 6% and no more except by a vote of the people. What this does is eliminate that personal liability that county officials have for expending beyond the levy. Yesterday in Washington County, a taxpayers organization filed an $8 million lawsuit against the Washington County Commissioners, the Washington County Council, the County Administrator, the County Finance Officer, and others, and this is going to court anyway. But I think it would be far better if this law were repealed.
There's a pending court case on this bill?
Filed yesterday.
This does not affect that.
This does not affect that. But what it would affect is all other counties in the state with population of more than 50,000. This would not affect any pending lawsuit.
There will be 35 more filed today.
There may be. I estimated that under this statute, the county commissioners individually and collectively in Multnomah County this year would be liable for about $50 million.
Mr. Chairman, well, I didn't know that.
What would be your reaction if in this, in line six, we said, find the amount of the annual property tax levy, and have a new subsection three that says subsection one does not apply to funds, to federal funds, or state tax funds?
Well, I don't think there is any way you can spell out all of the other funds and be inclusive, unless you say all other funds, all other monies. And if you're saying all other monies, then I think the elimination of this does that, and still doesn't jeopardize the levy, or give the counties any more authority than in a levy. That is.
You think you're going to take it out? I think it may be a
lot. I don't see what you're talking about. Because then they have to then keep track.
On accounting procedures, on every business,
No,
they have to say as they budget. This $3 million comes out of this state money. This $2 million comes out of this federal money, and go right on through the whole thing instead of adding it all. It would be a very peculiar system, I would think.
Yeah, I think it is kind of unworkable.
Oh, geez,
all right. I don't know. You guys are so convinced. You need one more.
Thank you, Frank.
Aye.
Areas of power, authority, and responsibility of cities and counties.
And until we do that, and we haven't done that now, until we do that, I don't think that it is good business or good policy for us to delegate to every county in the state just an outright flat grant of the taxing authority, whether you have or don't have the emergency clause provision.
All right, you got the amendment you're going to bring in?
I would move in substance
no,
that...
No, you want to see the amendments in writing.
I would ask the council to... All right.
You meet with him and bring him in and put this back on for next Tuesday, consider your amendment. Okay, that concludes the work session on...
Chairman, did we resolve the question to satisfaction of the majority of the committee on... I just heard you touch on...
Yeah, I'd like to direct you here what kind of amendment.
There's no point in preparing amendments. This is a substantive amendment. It's a simple concept. You simply take away their taxing that's distinguished from their licensing cost. And that would be my proposal. But can we adopt policy?
If you want to vote.
I would move the policy is to remove from House Bill 3009 any authority by the non-charter counties to levy a tax.
My recollection is the proponent of the bill to be able to do that, and you might have passed the
bill. Well, that's their idea. I don't have to agree with them. This is a bill that's for us. We can do whatever we want with it.
I've discussed this issue with some of the county commissioners involved, at least in my district, and they would very much like to have the ordinance making power, but they're not that interested in the tax power. I think there might be some counties in the state that would be. I agree with we should give do this. You know, we waited over 100 years to extend ordinance making power to the county, and there's no need to go all the way. I would think that we should give them the power to draft the kind of ordinance that would stop this and things of that nature without having to run the legislature. I would support that.
Further discussion. Heard the motion. First call the roll.
Mr.
No.
Mr.
Aye.
Mr. Eckhart.
No.
Mr. Gerstein.
No.
Mr. Leader.
Aye.
Okay. Motion failed.
Why don't we go ahead and prepare the amendment, fellow Chairman? I think it's ever helpful to Howard. There are sufficient votes to pass it out, so to make the change.
Would Dean arrange with Mr. Todd to draft the amendment?
Senator Meeker?
There is an alternative, which would be an automatic referral. Rather than letting the voters appeal it and refer it, just refer it. Whenever an ordinance is drafted, tax is passed by the county commissioner, the automatic vote automatically. Without a referral. That's an alternative to no tax.
Let me lay one other thing on, and I would like to ask that amendments be drafted or see if there's any support here for this concept. It seems to me, I discussed this with Marion Rushing, who thought it could be done. I'm not saying that she or anyone else supports this or opposes it. It seems to me that the county ordinance levying authority should be countywide unless there is a conflict with the ordinance of an incorporated city. So I would like to see an amendment in this bill also that would so provide, namely that the ordinances could at least be countywide in scope, except that where there is a conflict between a city ordinance within an incorporated city and the countywide ordinance, that the city ordinance would prevail. The language of this statute, by the way, is restricted outside of the incorporated areas of the city except for their consent.
You want to have another draft on that?
Yeah.
Okay, let's move back on the work session next Tuesday.
Mr. Chairman,
do you have any notes?
I wonder if there's any sympathy for the compromise method of automatically referring a tax bill.
Is there an amendment on that? Yeah. Anybody else got any amendments on that?
Chairman, I'd also like to take a look at the initiative or the referendum aspect. 10% of the registered voters of the county. I'd like to see how that compares to what the state requirement for.
Yeah, that's twice what it is.
Yeah, and it's registered voters as opposed to those who voted in the last election, which makes four times what we do on the state level. And I think that maybe we ought to take a look at that and see what the rough figures are. We want to, might want to make it the voters of the county commissioners.
How about just having the vote for justice? In other words, use the same test, only within the jurisdiction.
We change the governor
or whatever it is.
All right.
So why don't we keep it the same official, only you just take the vote in that jurisdiction?
I'll have Dean check with Secretary of State's office. Tony has 10% of those who voted in the last school election.
You going to bet about that?
No.
Any further discussion? I'll go to Senate Joint Resolution 23, which involves the purchase of Glendevere Golf Course, I assume it's the Seventh-day Adventist Church.
They still own it.
They advertise in the Wall Street Journal. They have sold. Representative Aiken.
Mr. Chairman, before the distinguished member of the House of Representatives begin, I'd like to indicate that this morning on KXL Radio, there's a big story about Representative Aiken making it a deal with the city of Portland with the trade regarding this bill.
Yeah. City of Portland has expressed some interest in Glendevere Golf Course. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I want to assure the committee it wasn't necessary to send the subpoena, however, to get me over here this morning for this important bill. Did you want the thick statement or the thin statement spread evenly?
Well, let's do the thin one first.
All right. I brought a lot of material, Mr. Chairman, because as you forewarned me that there may be some questions on your part.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, SJR 23 is a simple bill asking the asking the Highway Commission to purchase Glendevere Golf Course as a new state park facility. This is the kind of thing they do, have been doing, and will be doing in the future. The fact that their major activity in the past has been park sites in less populated areas, and the Glendevere site is in a urban heartland of Oregon, is a distinction without a difference. It may be more of their activity in the past has been in the ways of parks should have been closer to the people, where frequency of use would have made the cost less than some purchases they have made where costs are lower but use less. If we do not have the money for this kind of thing, perhaps we ought to call a moratorium on all park purchasing activities by the Commission. The Commission is asking this legislature to authorize $175 million or $150 million in bonds this session to carry on needed road building and maintenance. I would suggest that we ought to be assisting in the effort to bring some balance between the automobile and people in our urban areas. Just now, the Commission is completing work on the Fremont Bridge, a major, I might add, a colossal arterial that will lend to promote the traffic east and west in the city. It will take pressure off the Banfield, we might expect, but automobiles need air to run on, and so do people. Suppose that we begin with the search for balance by suggesting that we promote one blade of grass for every square foot of concrete that the Highway Commission has laid down in the city of Portland in the last 15 years. We have casually assumed that localities could and would meet all of their own local needs in the way of parks, just as we have assumed that mass transit systems would be self-sustaining, that fare box receipts would keep buses on the road, and that in the age of the automobile, everyone would not want to be a driver and enjoy the convenience of an automobile. A convenience that has become pretty much an inconvenience in urban areas. We will hear the argument that gasoline taxes are for roads exclusively. To be sure, they are a user tax. But the use can be generally assumed to be any purpose which promotes the continued easy use of automobiles. If buses take drivers off the road, then that promotes use for those who are driving that day. If parks help keep the air usable and the lungs of the citizens healthier and help urban people live longer, then that forestalls the day we will have to shut down the Highway Commission and adopt a permit system on driving in the city. You will hear it said that highway funds ought not to subsidize other purposes. I would put it another way. People have been subsidizing the automobile with their health, wealth, and well-being for years. Freeways have taken out their homes, exhaust have filled their lungs, and the rumble of cars has exhausted their nervous system. Let us turn some of the zeal of the Highway Commission for more remote park areas to more immediate needs, immediate to those who need most relief. The details of Glendevir golf course property are briefly these. The only 36-hole golf course in the Northwest, and the adjoining space occupies 232 acres, generally valued at around $3 million in its present use. Revenues from the golf course are estimated at $175,000 a year. More importantly, Glendevir is one of the last surviving civic green spaces in the metropolitan area. Opportunity to save these vanishing areas are rare. Civilization, if you like, is moving ever eastward from the city of Portland. And a decade from now, Glendevir will even be more a part of the urban core. Everyone is aware of our population pressure and the demand for homes and other services at the edges of major cities. And it doesn't matter whether you look at Los Angeles or San Francisco or Seattle for your vision of the future of Portland. What you see is what we must avoid. Providing usable green space is one preventative action, and the city and the county governments cannot do it all. With the pressures on them, they can do very little without either federal or state assistance. Against these arguments, we will find some traditional bureau arguments. We can't afford it. We have higher priorities. We need to pour more concrete. I would say that we need to stop accepting this narrow tunnel vision as adequate wisdom. As the man said, the road to hell is paved. I would thank the committee for this bill this morning.
You send me a copy of your long version. I want to read it.
I do have a long version, sir.
Oh, yes.
Read during the summer.
You're right.
I have three letters from some local schools I'd like to leave with the committee.
Senator, Hardy, could you tell us a little bit about the building there and what it's going to cost? Surely you're not suggesting the state buy a golf course.
I have suggested that the state buy the golf course. The city of Portland operates and maintains golf courses, contract with the city of Portland to operate and maintain Glendevir.
Now, do most of your folks out in that area play golf?
I don't play golf. I'm sure that there are a number of people in that area, and as well as from all over the Northwest, that play golf there.
Does the state of Oregon own any other golf courses?
Not to my knowledge.
Have you ever considered, Chairman, buying the land but turning it into a people park? I think you're making excellent points on asphalt and concrete. But I don't play golf either, so I'm a little prejudiced. But I've never really known of a golf course being what you could call a people program, unless you wear a helmet. And it seemed to me that your argument, if you carry it on further, would mean that this ought to be a place for people as opposed to a place to golf for golfers.
Well,
and it would make a lot of difference to me.
You do want to respond, Senator? What I would call golf, most people don't call golf either. But I do play at it. And I happen to know that Glendevir is in a unique situation as far as a lot of the schools in that district are concerned. And they all use several schools in that area. Glendevir is their home golf course.
But in a population of 1,000 school children, how many of them are on the golf team?
Quite a few. And a lot more play at it. A lot more, and it's a game that more and more of them are trying to play.
It's not an easy matter, I don't think, Senator, to develop a golf course. And here we have a fully developed golf course. If we were just looking for parks, it'd be something else. But I think the direction is there for the Highway Commission to expand itself. We do a lot of other things with the within the Highway Commission. I don't think that this would be outside that.
One more comment. I would almost bet that the Denver golf course is used more as far as numbers are concerned than would be if it was turned into a park. Just observation of golf course.
Then maybe the Highway Division ought to be making golf courses for the park.
Well, I assume they would.
Well, that's apparently the thrust I got. Okay, that helps me make up my mind. Thank you.
Senator Cook. Well, I'd like to make a comment and then ask a question relative to what you're saying, Molly. It seems to me that one of the possible directions of development might be to have a people facility in connection with the golf course. R.J. Frank is here to testify, and I think he might testify on that. Also, Commissioner Gardner is here, and I assume that he might testify on that. So I don't think it is necessarily a golf course. The other thing that someone has touched upon, and it's significant, is I don't know who said this or who proved it or if the witnesses will set it forth, but the contention is made that that golf course has enough pure air manufacturing facilities, namely trees and grass, to clean the air of 6 miles of freeway emissions. That's a significant and important thing, particularly in the metropolitan area, even if it were just a golf course, it's a factory for clean air. Now, Harvey, would you mind telling us something about your negotiations to the extent that you can with the city, with the Highway Commission, vis-a-vis the possible trade of Dodd Park for Glenmere?
Yeah, I'd very much like to comment on that, Mr. Chairman. Since Senator Cook introduced
on the Sandy River, the upper Sandy, belonging to the city of Portland.
You have left that property, sir?
We don't join it, no.
actually, Mr. Chairman, Dodge Park is in Clackamas County. It's right at the point where the Bull Run River runs into the Sandy River. Dodge Park was given to the city for the Water Bureau's use back in 1935, and since that time, the Parks Department of the City of Portland has maintained it as a park site. However, the property does belong to the City of Portland. I have been very disappointed that Multnomah County commissioners have not acted in this matter, and as a matter of fact, in complete frustration of receiving any type of positive action on the part of the Board of Multnomah County Commissioners, I asked the city commissioners and the mayor last week to meet with me. They did here in Salem, the entire city council, and approached them with the subject that I was getting nowhere. There was nothing positive from Multnomah County in terms of helping to finance a joint effort with the city and the county and the state in terms of doing something. The city expressed a willingness to trade some property or to participate in an effort to save Glendiver Golf Course, and we suggested that perhaps we look for some of the regular type, quote unquote, park facilities that the State Highway Department might be interested in, and we came up with Dodge Park. I've had some positive assurances, the types of optimistic attitudes on the part of the City Council that they would be willing to enter into some type of an arrangement for the trade for Glendiver Golf Course if the Highway Department would be willing to do this. And so this is the point at which I'm looking towards hopeful positive action on the part of the state legislature to direct the Highway Commission to enter into some type of arrangement for Glendiver Golf Course with the City of Portland. It would be very helpful if the Multnomah County, instead of sitting up there and talking about saving Glendiver, would be willing to put up some money or some assurances that they would cooperate in maintaining or enhancing Glendiver. The City of Portland, I don't think, can do it alone. But until we get some positive thing from Multnomah County Commissioners that they are indeed interested in saving Glendevere Golf Course rather than just talking about it, I can't do much more. But I think the state legislature in the city of Portland can act positively and will act positively, I hope.
Further questions, Representative Davidson? Thank you, Harvey, for coming to this. Commissioner Gordon?
Commissioner Gordon, Multnomah County, and here on behalf of Senate Joint Resolution 23. First of all, I'd like to tell the committee that I commend Senator Cook and also Representative Aikenson for introducing legislation down here in behalf of Glendevere. I would like to correct the record here that this is my fourth or fifth time down here, I believe, speaking out in favor of Glendevere. Originally, Multnomah County was the one that called a meeting together of Commissioner Ivancy and Representative Aikenson and Senator Cook and myself, and we met in Senator Cook's office, and we were the ones that came down and asked if something couldn't be done to put in legislation, which both Senator Cook and Representative Aikenson agreed to do, and I'm certainly pleased that they did. Also, for the record, Multnomah County has probably been the only government agency that has worked diligently in trying to bring all the factors together. Just the other day, I believe it was a week ago, I asked for the board's approval to get some funding for a feasibility study for the sale of bonds, whether it would be us or a park district or a private corporation or what, in the event that there were some funds made available. I recall very specifically that Commissioner Ivancy from the City of Portland stated to me that the city wasn't interested in putting a dime up for something like this, and if it was given to them, they'd take it, but they didn't want to participate. Multnomah County has never taken this position. As a matter of fact, I'm...
Could you back up and repeat that again?
Beg your pardon?
Could you back up and repeat what you said about the money?
Yes. What I said was is that originally, down here in Senator Cook's office, I asked Commissioner Ivancy if the city would be willing to come up with some funds along with Multnomah County. And Commissioner Ivancy said no, he couldn't foresee the city coming up with any money. And I was attempting to try to set up some sort of a joint effort on the part of the city and the county together with whatever other sources we could identify to purchase the golf course. He said to me at that time the city would not put up any money. I'm currently recommending to our board in our budget right now, and the city's budget was just approved yesterday, and I saw no mention made of Glendevere whatsoever. In our budget, hopefully, that there will be some recommendation in acquisition on Glendevere, not for the total purchase price, but any way we can join in with the state highway or with a park district or with whoever else in trying to save Glendevere.
Let me take a second to help. I thought the figure I was going to be here 3 minutes.
Right.
And so this 1.5 million we have here has the state participate at 50%.
Well, we have to amend it 3 minutes.
Yeah, I was going to make an amendment or ask about an amendment here today on this particular bill, but I was just trying to correct the record that unfortunately Representative Aikenson hasn't apparently been talking to me or anybody else, but we have been doing more work than anybody else on Glendevere. I've had 3 meetings now. We met with a private group here recently on the trying to identify some private funds to come in on a long-term basis. Mr. Frank, who's sitting in the room, was in on that meeting, and because of that meeting is where we got to the point of asking for the feasibility study. We've actually done more work to find out the economic of satisfying a bonding company to sell revenue bonds, whether it be the county or a park district or a private or the state for that matter. Before you can sell any bonds, you have to satisfy a bonding company that there is enough cash there to debt service the bonds, and we're trying to get that information now.
Well, the testimony that they had us there when they set the evidence for trying to go to hospital was that I believe from the credit operator of
Yes, they were saying you can't make money based on a $3 million purchase, And the 36-hole golf course cannot debt service a $3 million investment. But you probably could with the various services that we think can be introduced at this particular site. And I wanted to get back to what Senator Carson said a minute ago, that we believe there is enough events that can take place so that would debt service maybe $2.5 million.
What are these other services?
Well, for instance, Mr. Frank can speak more specifically to some of the services, but I'm thinking of a large Olympic-sized swimming pool where we might get some support financially from that, in addition to the county or the state or whoever else would put funds in. Tennis courts, a tennis club, a driving range that would produce a considerable amount of revenue.
These are all public.
They would either be public or contract with private to secure funds, one or the other, the whole 36-hole golf course that we're envisioning would be public. The other facilities would be public, with a possible exception of a tennis club, if it came in to lease by contract or something from this whoever was running this thing, with the possibility of getting X number of dollars to help buy the whole golf course. Now, that's not any presentation I'm making, but it's just one of the alternatives, one of the options that might be available. Frankly, I'd like to see the whole thing public, everything that's in there public. But if we can't do it that way, I certainly wouldn't discourage a small part of that complex coming in from private enterprise for a private club if it was going to help save Glendevere. But my preference would be on a priority basis to have the whole thing open. So I wanted to make that clear.
Well, these other services you should
In answer to Senator Carson a while ago, it's my envision that this would be a not only a golf course but a public recreation center for many other things, such as jogging trails and bicycle trails for the public, those people who don't play golf. Beg your pardon?
We just opened up all the cemeteries to do that.
Well, incidentally, I live right adjacent to Glendevere Golf Course, but I don't play golf, and it happens to be in my county, of course, and I'm supporting this thing I have for the last 5 years. And I know that there are many people who do play golf all over the community, particularly blue-collar workers who can't afford to belong to private clubs, that come there in great numbers. And so this golf course not only serves all the students in the area that the Senator Jernstedt was talking about, but it serves many, many people in the whole county who can't afford to belong to a private golf club.
Do you recall the testimony of the Glendevere County Commission with respect to the uses of Glendevere by people other than Multnomah County residents?
I think there are a great number of people that come from all over the metropolitan area.
Do you have the figures on that, Jim?
What I'm really saying is we'd like to preserve Glendevere as a recreational facility, including golf, plus other amenities that are not now there, such as the swimming pool, the tennis, the jogging, the bicycle trails, the driving range, and whatever else that could be introduced into that to make it economically feasible. It is the only 36-hole golf course on the West Coast, not only the Northwest. And it's a beautiful open space out there, and it isn't a residential area, and I think it would be a shame to lose it. I might say this, that some time back, Multnomah County purchased some property out in the west side, out at the Tryon Creek area, which is in Clackamas County and Oswego. We were the only ones that purchased the land, and finally the State Highway Commission came along and purchased that property, and we donated that land that we had purchased to make up that park in that area. So Multnomah County has been concerned about open space and parks, and we have bought property. We have cooperated with the State Highway Commission in the past. They have purchased parks before, such as...
The property is originally purchased for
a swimming pool. No, Tryon Creek is further down in Oswego. This is up further higher up near the high school there, and it's a beautiful park, and the State Highway Commission came in just out of the blue and bought that thing, and we did make a contribution ourselves. And of all the gas tax money coming out of the Portland metropolitan area there, we think it's very justified to take a small part of the funds that that we contribute back into open space that the State Highway Commission could do. I would like to offer an amendment here where it says up to $1,500,000. I'd like to change that to up to $3 million. Up to, because once we get an appraisal of that golf course, depending on what it is, $1.5 million wouldn't even, it might cover possibly half of it, and that's all.
Send the car to move Commission property.
Yeah. Okay. Well, send the car to move $3 million.
Discussion. All those in favor of the amendment,
signify by saying aye.
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 As I recall, last session we passed the legislation which allows for a property tax break for open spaces, and yet I see in a letter here provided by Representative Agerson that the increased tax would be $90,000 in the court. Could you comment on that?
Yes, our appraiser, our assessor, just went out and reappraised Glendevere as well as other golf courses. Raised the taxes from, I think it was something like $35,000 or $40,000 to $93,000 or something, based on a $2,900,000 valuation. As current chairman of the Board of Equalization, I have asked the assessor to give me the details of how they made this appraisal on, based on what the comparables and so on, to find out if that is a true evaluation of Glendevere plus the other golf courses. This came about because the 70 Adventists chose not to go for the open space in reducing their taxes, because if they did, beg your pardon? Well, a golf course has to initiate asking for the relief, and if they don't do it, they're not going to get it. And I think it was obvious they wanted to sell it, and they didn't want to have it classified as open space and not be able to sell it. And incidentally, when this $2.9 million came in, the Adventists did not come in and ask for an appeal to the Board of Equalization.
Because they're getting ready to sell it.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. And they fire a press release, apparently. That's why they're selling it to the taxes.
Right.
Yeah. What would their tax fee have been like?
I can't tell you exactly, but I think it would be probably down around $25,000 to $30,000, I imagine, something like that.
Now, isn't one of the important factors here, and I want to make sure that Wally and Tony recognize this, the problem is that the actual value for its highest and best use is more than the value of a golf course at that location. And it's probably worth $1.5 million or $2 million maybe for golf course purposes, but it's worth $3 million for residential. So somewhere or another, in order to preserve it, we need to obtain, I think, some public money in order at least to pick up the difference, and then to acquire, eventually, we'll get a return on it. Eventually we'll get a return on it based on inflated value, just like I paid too much for my house on the Sandy River, according to my friend Howard Willis. I paid about $5,000 too much, and yet I could sell it for $10,000 more than I bought it for 10 years ago. So eventually we're going to come out on the deal, really, even though we pay $3 million, we're going to come out alone.
Of course, we could condemn it.
We could condemn it, but they're willing to buy it. So, and then once you get it in houses, you can't come in and pull up all the concrete. So it really is kind of an emergency situation. We need to acquire it, or the thing's going to be gone. And so we do need a public subsidy in order to protect it. That's what it boils down to.
I might just say one other thing. Multnomah County is very concerned about parks, and we've been dumping money in for years in building roads and blacktopping streets and so on, and hopefully I'm going to recommend to the board this year that this be the year of the parks. We're hoping to come up with some brand new parks this year in the whole community and make our contribution for open space, and so we need this very bad, and we're going to do our part to supply other parks, hopefully in the metropolitan area of Multnomah County. And if necessary, Multnomah County stands ready to match whatever we can match if we have to save this park. And I've asked the city to come up with the same proposition and even let them run it. I don't care. And they apparently don't want to put dime one or anything, but Multnomah County is not opposed to doing it.
Have you approached the Highway Commission on this thing at all?
No, because I think this is a legislative matter, and I would leave that to Senator Cook and Harvey Akerson, the Representative Akerson, to do this, because the authority has to come from the legislature. The direction has to come through your resolution.
From the tree line, which is
Beg your pardon?
The only comment I'd make is that the Highway Commission is currently negotiating and has promised from the federal government over $5 million that they're going to match with another five. That's $10 million they're going to invest in parks. And they're going to spend most of it along the Willamette River, which is a heck of a long way from downtown Portland. And it seems more logical to me to spend that money in Portland where the people can use it. But they're going to put it down here on the Willamette River, 40 miles from anybody.
Well, we've talked to the State Highway Commission on a number of times on the fact is I think I brought this up once to George Ballin, but the fact that the legislature was coming up and they were going to put the bills in, I just felt that this would be the proper place for it. And frankly, I'm delighted to see there's a number of bills in. I think there's two on the House side, and then Senator Cook has this bill. But we do stand ready to support anything, even if we have to match if we can, at the expense of building another park. So we're not down here saying we're not interested in open space or parks, because we are.
Senator,
a comment and a suggestion. I, living where I do, I've gone by then there for the last 25 years or so, and I've watched the urban sprawl just go out in that direction. There is the only open space that is left, and I personally think it would be a shame if it is not retained for public use. I would suggest, Mr. Chairman, that we have here in the Capitol building one of the commissioners of the Portland Golf Group, Lloyd Schmitz, and he helps run the city-owned golf course. And it would be interesting to have his comments regarding the financial capability of that he foresees.
Could I mention one other thing? The Dodge Park is approximately, I don't know what the value would be, but I would guess around $200,000 approximately value. There's 95 acres there in Dodge Park, and if you put $2,000 an acre on it, you're talking about a couple $100,000. And to take Dodge Park and in exchange Dodge Park at $200,000 value for a $3 million golf course, they'd still have to come up with $2,800,000 if that was the price difference as subsidies. So it really isn't, you know, if they want to take the park, I have no objection, but you can't have it a trade-off value for value because it's just not there.
Without
some extra money, because the value there at Dodge Park doesn't equal the value at Glendaver.
Is there a bill identical to this in the House?
I don't think it's identical. I think Senator Cook can speak to that.
Harvey and I each put in a bill on it.
Apparently there's another one.
Well, he put in another bill. It has a more general bill that would give bonding authority to the Highway Commission, I think, to issue bonds by parks. It's not specific as to when.
The lend money, the loan money. And
are there other questions, Mr. Gordon?
I appreciate the opportunity of being here again to sponsor this type of legislation. Thank you very much.
Jim Frank?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is R.J. Frank, Jr., 6625 Northeast 82nd Avenue in Portland. I'm here representing the Citizens to Save Glendaver, and I'd like to maybe read a few things to you. I think it's the fastest way to get the point across. But before I do that, I'd like to stress one point. As far as the Citizens to Save Glendaver are concerned, and it consists of some 1,000-plus people that become active members of our organization, we're interested in saving Glendaver for a total recreation facility. I live approximately half a block from the parking lot at Glendaver Golf Course, and I don't play golf either. There's just an awful lot of benefits derived from Glendaver being there, but there are a lot of people that use it. The unique thing, I think, about it is the fact that it's got the ability to help pay for open space, which you don't have the golf course facilities. I'd like to just also stress to you the fact that there is some urgency in this question. The fact that the Adventists have selected another site to build their hospital, the fact of the matter is they'll have to dispose of Glendaver Golf Course. We recognize that the probability that there'll be pressure for some other use of the property, and if we don't think of it particularly in a golf course concept, but we think of it in terms of a open space concept, I think it's a better way to look at it. So I think there's... Right. They're advertising it for sale, and obviously they need their money out of it to place into the other facility down there, Mile 205. Probably one of the leading planners in the United States is Desmond Muirhead. He's probably done more for the planning profession than anybody that you might run into. And in an article in the he wrote for Golf Digest. I would just like to read a couple of excerpts from it to you.
Who was that?
Desmond Muirhead. This is, "Ecology Needs Golf, in My Opinion."
What's the date of that?
I don't have a date on it. I'll give you the article. How's that? "I am all for the current uproar about ecology, but I often wish the politicians and others who use the word would take 5 minutes off to study its meaning. Ecology means simply the study of living things in their environment. And people forget that man is a living thing. He is, in fact, the most important part of the ecological scene, however destructive he may be at some times. I thoroughly approve the Sierra Club and the conservationists, but I think it much more important that man should live in a clean, rat-free homes near parks or suburban green areas than some delicate, ephemeral ecology be preserved in a formerly uninhabited swamp or desert. Golf can help us do that. Golf courses are probably the happiest extensions of nature. And in and around cities, lush fairways make fine green lawns. They become city parks which, since they are financially supported by their users, are not a tax burden. Golf courses please the eye, satisfy the soul, and improve the health. They reduce the dust, glare, heat, and noise in a community. Just to live within sight of a golf course is a refreshment and a boon to dwellers of city and suburb alike. Right now, many more Americans would like to play golf if it weren't so hard to get on a course. In recreation-oriented areas of Florida where courses are plentiful, as much as one-third of the population plays golf. 300 players can support a golf course. As we edge towards the affluent, recreation-oriented society, we will need at least one golf course per 5,000 people. This would mean 40,000 more golf courses in the next few years. Golf courses can be among the city parks of the future, and they should be." I think it's important because it really puts it in perspective for you. County. Yes, right, sure. But in a few years back, the Multnomah County Planning Commission did a study concerning golf courses, and they had reasons for concern. And it said, "During the last 5 years, there has been developed a tremendous interest in preserving open space, land, and urban areas. Golf courses, although used by a minor portion of the population, provide a large percentage of the open space in the urban areas. Although lost courses are generally replaced by new facilities, these new courses tend to be further from their users. Neighborhoods which once derived a part of their worth from these green open areas often depreciate in value when golf courses change use. Not only does the immediate neighborhood around a golf course suffer an economic loss, but the whole urban area loses a portion of its aesthetic character with each acre of open space."
How many acres?
232 acres, which is eliminated from its use. "Urban area courses offer an unusual opportunity to provide open space that really pays for itself. Unlike parks or greenways, for instance, the Willamette Greenway, golf courses accrue significant income from users' fees. In the Portland area, where golf facilities are not a surplus quantity, municipal courses meet normal expenses with additional surplus for capital improvements," and that refers to a City of Portland golf course budget. Another thing I think of kind of important, it kind of puts it in perspective for everybody, would be an editorial that was in the Argonian. "The entire state has a stake in preserving this facility of Glendevere for the people. There is nothing like this in the entire state. Our state high school golf tournament has been held there for more than 20 years, and many organizations, including labor, have held numerous tournaments here. This helped make it a preservation reality." And I think that's true. As Commissioner Gordon told you, it's the average person that probably uses Glendevere to play golf on. He doesn't belong to a private club. He uses Glendevere. And people from all over the state have used it. I'm sorry I don't have the figures here. I thought I had them in the report with me, but I don't. I think it's important to keep in mind, too, as Representative Axon stated, that isn't it a lot nicer to have this open space where the people are, rather than maybe in Hell's Canyon or on the Willamette Greenway? And here's an opportunity to preserve some open space, really, where it partially pays for itself. Our purpose in appearing before you today is to urge you to create a grant or a combination of a grant or loan in the amount of $3 million for the preservation of Glendevere. Glendevere Golf Course, based upon a feasibility study that will be done by the Multnomah County, will probably show a gross or a net income of something like $175,000. Now, the last year that the present tenant operated the facility, he was paying $103,000 a year rent. He paid taxes of $39,000, and the estimated profit there was $33,000. Now, all things aside, he couldn't operate real efficiently. The point being is that probably it's the only way, if it's in public ownership, that it can be retained, because $175,000 is not even 6% on a $3 million purchase price on a net basis. And obviously, it wouldn't even be that for an operator if he were paying property taxes of $93,000. Therefore, it appears the only feasible solution, it would be public ownership of it. And this is one thing you can do. I was interested in reading last night not only the article on the front page of the Journal concerning the negotiations about the trade on Dodge Park, but also an article on the inside that referred specifically to the city of Longview, who is now in the process of building two golf courses. Interesting enough, the state's providing some of the money to do it, the county's providing some of the money to do it, and the city's providing some of the money to do it. I think we have a unique situation here in where all the public bodies can provide something. And we would urge you, as this committee, to recommend to the Ways and Means, or wherever you recommend it, that somewhere around $3 million, which of course is not a fixed price yet, but somewhere around $3 million be provided either in the combination of a complete grant or a combination of a grant and loan. Thank you.
Senator Meeker, what were the property taxes under open space?
What would be the property taxes on this under open space? I never calculated the property tax under open space, but I would estimate we would have to take the year, Senator Meeker, because if we were talking about this year, after it's been reassessed, it would probably be around $40,000. If we were talking about the previous years, I would suppose it would have been $15,000 or $20,000.
What would you value? You're a real estate appraiser, are you not? That's one of your occupations.
That's what they say.
Okay, now what would you value this land as a golf course, as distinguished from as it is?
Well, Senator Cook, I did not make an appraisal of the property. I've heard of figures that where the appraisal has been made, which indicated the value of the property as a golf course was approximately $2 million. I've also heard figures that have been expressed that probably for housing, a figure of approximately $3 million. I have done some analysis as far as whether a subdivider, because that happens to be one of the main sources of income in my office, can make any money at $3 million. Obviously, in my opinion, he can't. If I took that and divided it into 1,000 home sites and I started adding the cost of per home site, which would approximate, in my opinion, about $2,500 per site, I would be in that $5,500 before I started paying interest on the money and before I started paying the front end load. And I would have to look, I think, at an absorption maybe of 5 to 7 years before those lots would be picked up. You see, the unique thing is part of the value is lost once you destroy the golf course. That's what creates the value of the home sites. And that is the amenity that really creates the value in that area. If you cut it all into home sites, I don't think it has a value even of $3 million. Now, that's not based upon an appraisal. That's just an opinion at this time. Subject to change, I would say.
Mr. Frank, much of what he said I concur with 100%, and that is that I think, much as Senator Meeker has indicated, I think it's time that we look at Portland's preserved open space. But your open space and my open space may differ a little bit. You and I don't play golf, and perhaps that's part of my irritation. My concern is that if you buy it on the basis of open space, I don't frankly buy the blue collar. I don't see a factory letting out everybody grabbing the golf club and marching off Thursday afternoon to do the golfing bit. I think for every golfer, there are 10 children who don't play golf, you know, and I can bring the violins out. Is there any possibility that we can combine what you're talking about and shrink it? I realize that we would no longer have the only 36-hole golf course in the West, but shrink to 18 and provide a multiple use open space, park, and golfing tennis enterprise, is that an offer?
We don't think you have to shrink it, Senator Carson. We've done a fairly detailed study. We employed the former professional that was there that now is involved in golf course design and golf course management, along with three others in the state, and this is their business. He happened to grow up on the course. We can easily modify that course to have on the West Nine to reduce it down to what's called an executive type course by revamping one hole. This in itself provides space for the driving range, will provide space as a result for tennis facilities, will provide space for the swimming facilities. And I'd like to add, as far as the swimming facilities, there's been formed in Multnomah County in the city of Portland a nonprofit organization made up of all the swim clubs who are very interested in replacing the lost Jansen Beach long course. This is another facility which is a 50-meter pool used by the swim clubs. And they're extremely interested, as being headed up by the people of David Douglas, of locating on this Guinevere Golf Course property as part of a total recreation facility. We see all kinds of little pods and space around there for even park facilities or open space facilities without destroying the full 36 holes. And the reason for not destroying the 36 holes is to provide the income to help debt service part of this investment, and also to keep maintaining the open space. We think this is unique. There's nothing like it where it can be done. It's very minor modification, very minor modification. You will not have a 36-hole course as exists now. You'll have 27 holes as exists now. And one of the interesting things about Glenover, it's not what's considered a championship course. That's why people like to play there. That's why it has the greatest play. It's the kind of course that you can score on. You know, if I go out once a year and play, I might get a, 60, see? But it's the kind of course that the average person likes to play on. They're not hard greens and things like that, and that's why it's very, very successful. Does that answer your question?
Yeah. Yeah. May I make a comment, Mr. Chairman? Wasn't that whole area designed at a time when land really wasn't a primary consideration, and there's a lot of wasted space in that for park areas, for trails, and everything else? I see a great combination.
It's at the Planning Commission. I just heard about this meeting or brought the plan down for you, but we could show you. It can easily be done, and it's a minor modification. And there is a lot of open pods and spaces. You drive along 148, there's places in there for park facilities. It's all heavily wooded, just cleaned out a little bit. It's very easy to do because there's 232 acres. Now you can get 36 holes on less than 232 acres.
That was my question.
Yeah.
How many acres does it take?
It depends upon what size course you're going to build.
Well, what are you planning?
Well, we're talking. I'm not planning anything, Senator Meeker. I'm saying that there have been 36 hole courses built on as little as 180 acres. So you've got, depending upon how you modify it, if you have no extra ground, you know.
Anybody else want to testify on Senate Joint Resolution 23? Okay, we'll close the hearing on 23. Thank you all, and go to Senate Joint Resolution 24.
Could I speak to that for you, sure, Chairman?
I'd like to suggest an amendment. This is one of those resolutions that members of the committee may realize that sometimes we get so busy with other things we don't carefully look at what we've ordered from legislative council. I'd like to make this a little broader, so I'd like to suggest these amendments on page 2, of course. Line 6, after the word Constitution, delete the rest of the line. On line 7, delete up through the word that, and then delete the word the, and then add the following language. A city, county, or a city or county charter may close. Then on line 9, add after the word city, county, a comma, city or county. On line 10, delete the semicolon and substitute a comma so that it will read city or county, semicolon. Then on line 14, add a comma after the word county and add city or county. And then on line 18, substitute the word primary for general. Now what this then would modify it so that it is not as narrow as currently drafted. And I didn't intend that it would be quite that narrow, but I figured we'd do something when it got to committee. What this would then do as amended would be to allow a consolidated city county or a city or a chartered county to do the things that are provided in this bill. Number one, to establish taxing districts within the city, county, city, or county on the basis of the services to be provided by the city, county, city, or county. Two, to prescribe different tax rates for the different taxing districts. And three, to provide procedure for modification or dissolution of the taxing district and for changing the tax rate after the first fiscal year in which the city, county, city, or county levy tax. First 2 points are what I'm mainly concerned with. Now,
Here's how the problem arose. Jane Gerhart, who isn't here today, and we couldn't ask her, I guess we don't need her, but she was consulted by individuals connected with the study of the City-County Consolidation Commission. And it was her concern, and she raised a question. I see George Joseph is here, and he may confirm the question as to whether or not a consolidated city-county would have the power to provide different tax rates in different geographical areas of the city-county in recognition of the fact that some areas would, by their nature, receive less services from the city-county. Now, this has been a policy decision, I believe, of the city-county that they should attempt to do this. This has been one of the proposals in the proposed draft of the proposed city-county that they provide roughly, and George can give you the details, roughly up to the area where Harvey Aikenson lives, there would be one rate. From there out to the Sandy River, just west of where I live, at another rate, and then from where I live east, at a third rate. Is that about right, George? Okay, but then there's a question whether the constitutional provisions now in existence would permit this to be so. Well, there's a question. It hasn't been adjudicated. As I told George, I believe in the old, you probably heard me tell the story of the reformed wino, you know. When in doubt, do right, you know. And if there's a question, why don't you just do it straightforwardly and amend, propose and amend the Constitution so you can do it without worrying about whether you can or can't. I think that's the obvious way to do it. Now, so that's the first reason, the main reason why I ask that this be prepared and introduced would be to clearly give to the city-county the authority to set up more than one geographic area in terms of service, so you have a different rate depending on the level of service provided by the new city-county. Now, I want to expand it to cities and charter counties for this reason. There is legislation on the books now, which is probably of questionable constitutionality, that allows the city to do this now in an annexed area. I mean, if this is not constitutional for the city-county to do it, it probably obviously wouldn't be for the city to do it now, even though we now provide by law that they can. So I would like to regularize the current law, which does provide that cities may, in areas of the annex, provide for a different tax rate over a period of time. So this then would amend the two constitutional provisions that are referred to here so as to permit either a consolidated city-county or a city or a county, if they provide so provide in their charter, to establish more than one level of taxation.
George, could you come down and testify?
No, I came down.
I want to see government max.
Senator Beaker.
I'd like to ask
a
question, Senator Trump, Mr. Chairman. Would this eliminate much of the concern about consolidation from the interline?
I think it would make it much more likely that the consolidation might obtain the approval of areas outside of the Portland metropolitan area. This is one of the major concerns of those who are not just absolutely against it. You know, there are certain
like Senator Cook.
Just flat out against city-county consolidation. They don't want to hear any discussion of it one way or another. But I think that's a minority of the people, even in eastern Multnomah County. I think the majority of them are concerned, and we have from the public statements of certain candidates for mayor and council, concern that what they want to do is give us the business, shift Portland taxes out to us. This does concern. But if you, especially when we aren't getting services. But I think if we could have the framework for actually we only paid for what we get and not paid for something we aren't getting, many people could be sold presumably on the desirability of a consolidated city county. And that's what we proposed to do. This is not an anti-city-county consolidation proposal. I don't think. I don't think George would say that. At least I hope he wouldn't.
Well, let's hear what he's going to say.
Okay.
George?
It's interesting to come down here on the radio and hear on two news broadcasts that the city has voted to buy Glendevere and exchange it for Dodge Park. The city council did that this morning, and hear that it's still being debated down here. Somebody might call the city and ask what they've done while they while you've been
there. Dodge Park, about 2 8 thousand.
Yeah.
Chairman, I mentioned that prior to the hearing, because I heard there was pending some action,
which they supposedly took this morning. But I approached. My name is George Joseph. I'm chairman of the City County Charter Commission. I approached Senate Joint Resolution 24 with very mixed emotions. I wish it had been proposed by the same legislature that passed Chapter 199, that part relating to city-county consolidation, because it does, as Senator Cook has said, go to one of the most serious problems that we have faced. The present provisions of Chapter 199 purport to permit the charter to create what it refers to as taxing districts and to fix differential tax rates in those districts and to provide for changing of those districts. Now, the first question that comes to mind upon reading that statute is to anyone who's at all familiar with Oregon law in this area, there's an immediate question as to whether that provision of the statute is constitutional. We sought the informal advice of the Attorney General, and we were advised that that is unconstitutional. Now, we sought, I may say, just as a briefest aside, we sought to find some way to litigate the question during the time we were working on it in the charter, hoping to use as a vehicle the statute to which Senator Cook referred that allows, that is very similar and allows differential taxation in annexations. We at one time thought there was a case coming up, but for one reason and another that did not eventuate in a case. There have been some differential tax annexations. I believe the city of Albany, certainly Troutdale had a problem over that, and there have been some others, but it has never been litigated. And as Senator Cook has said, the present policy of the commission is in favor not only of differential taxation, but in favor of presently of a specific scheme which was also described by Senator Cook. However, as frequently happens, you're told that you have a legal problem, in this instance a constitutional problem. You can't do anything about it while you're working on the problem, and you have to go forward and hope that what you're doing will pass constitutional muster. The problem, simply put in constitutional terms, is that our Constitution says that taxation shall be uniform on all classes of property within the taxing district, within the district of the authority levying the tax. That's why we have special service districts. That's why the legislature has created special service districts. We, on the commission, have adopted the policy in favor of differential taxation. The final charter will contain a scheme of differential taxation. We have asked from the legislature, and the bill, I believe, has passed the House, for authority to put in our charter the power to create service districts in the city county. And we have sought that as a backup in the event that the differential taxing scheme that we adopt is killed by a challenge. Now, Senate Joint Resolution 24 addresses that problem, but our difficulty, we have a technical difficulty and we have a practical difficulty. This will come up for vote at the very same time the charter is up for a vote.
What's wrong with that?
There's several things wrong with it. In the first place, from our, and I'm talking from the commission point of view, there is a
There is a chance now. The question is at least open now. If it is defeated, and if this specific provision is defeated, which I think is a fair chance of anything that talks about taxation right now being defeated, we've never had a chance to resolve the question in a court of law. We've been beaten at the polls by people who are not involved in city-county consolidation. Frankly, it gives the opponents of city-county consolidation, of whom there are a substantial number, another way to get at city-county consolidation. It will be recalled that certain people in East County attempted to get a statewide referendum on city-county consolidation after the last session to refer 199. This, in effect, it could serve as a vehicle for a statewide referendum on city-county consolidation. And it does not, unfortunately, help with our immediate problem. It leaves us in the same bind. We've got to put out a charter, and we want to put out a charter that has a differential scheme in it, but it's just, this creates, from my point of view, and from I think there's a fair statement of the commission's deliberations on the point, it does not help solve our immediate problem, and it creates, or it leaves the problem the same, but leaves us in the position of, at the same time we're trying to get a charter passed, in effect having a statewide referendum on city-county consolidation focused on taxation. Technically,
I think I put you in our, guys, if I were a publicist working against city-county consolidation, I'd take the fact that you appeared here and testified today against this bill, and I'd just beat you to death with it.
You probably will, but I'm not. That doesn't mean very much to me, because there are so. If you want, I can be beaten to death on this charter on several grounds, Senator.
This is a straightforward effort to give to you the power to say that you have to clarify, and you can say to the people there that charter, a proposal on the Constitution that will clearly give to the commission the power if it doesn't have it now. Now also, in terms of legislative history, we don't have a rule in this state, I'm quite sure, that says that the defeat of a measure constitutes legislative history. In other words, simply because a screwy proposal was up and defeated doesn't establish the intent of something that happens to be the law. So the defeat of this measure, if it should be defeated, would not be history, would not show the intent of the legislature. It wouldn't show anything except for the fact that a proposal was made and defeated, I don't think.
Well,
is that your understanding of the thinking in terms of legislative history of a measure? The defeat of a measure does not demonstrate the intent of other legislation.
No, but it certainly has an influence on judges when they come to look at what policy is. But I'll agree with you, Senator Cook. It doesn't necessarily do those things. But this is one of the situations where, from the point of view of the work we're undertaking and the situation we're in, to have it, this is a situation where I would rather have the legal ambiguity and fight it out on legal grounds than I would to have a statewide referendum on city-county consolidation at the time the people of Multnomah County, who are the only people directly affected, are voting on a charter. And I don't know how that campaign would go, but I think I could make some fair predictions. But I think it's a matter, I think the issues are clearly stated, but I did mention that there are two other things. One, the description of the present differential scheme that is in the charter by Senator Cook is correct. I just wanted to say to the committee that so many problems have come up over that that the Finance Committee, subcommittee of the Commission, is now reconsidering that in a very radical way, again within the policy decision that differential taxation is desirable. We're now working on a very, very much different scheme that would, in effect, preserve the status quo differentials for a period of time. I also mentioned that there are some technical problems here. When this joint resolution was drafted, it was drafted on the basis of then existing language in ORS 199.765. There is a bill in this legislature which has passed the House, 3089, which I believe has been referred to this committee. And 3089 makes technical changes, not substantive, but technical changes in 199.765, which should, if this committee is disposed favorably to Joint Resolution 24, the two should be put together. That is, so the language is parallel. For example, subsection 2 of the joint resolution of section 14, subsection 2 of the joint resolution refers to different tax rates. Now, it occurred to us in the course of our
line 11 prescribed different tax rates.
I'm just giving you an example of the problem. There's no way that a charter can fix tax rates. 3089, and I would change the words change the words so that
provide for the administration of differential taxation.
Prescribe
a formula.
Formula is the substitution. I'm sorry that I don't have with me.
I've got the bill here.
Yes, and 3089, as a technical matter, the two would still fit together. The changes in 3089 would require parallel changes in Joint Resolution 24. And I think I'm correct, am I not, Senator Cook, that the joint resolution is really based on the language of
the legislative council draw it up, yeah. And if this has been clarified, that's certainly
and all of the changes that appear in engrossed 3089 they're not substantive at all. They go entirely to.
Do you have amendments to that? Are you suggesting amendments to 3089 now?
No. 3089 has been passed in a form that is agreeable. I'm just simply saying that Joint Resolution 24, insofar as the language of 3089 relates to differential taxation, if this committee is favorably disposed towards SJR 24, that language parallel language should appear in this resolution, just so they say the same thing. 3089 deals with that problem and one other problem, but the other problem is of no relevance to this question. I have nothing further, Mr. Chairman.
Are there questions of Joseph?
And the only thing that bothers you with this constitutional amendment is the timing.
Yes, that's essentially correct.
Is it about the timing?
It's the timing of when it would come up.
Is the charter up and made?
The statute provides that the charter may be submitted at a primary or general election. It is our present intention to submit it to the primary at the primary next year. There is a bill before the legislature to change primary dates, and we have put in a bill which is a provision in a bill 3093, which I think will come before this committee, permitting us to call a special election. But our only thought there is that's in the event the primary is changed, because we have to have a lead time of 5 months at least before. No, not for budget, for election of officials, primarily. Now, if they don't change the primary, and frankly, I don't know the present status of that primary change bill, then we don't need authority for a special election, and the charter would be submitted in the May 1974 primary. But your synopsis is correct. With the exception of the technical problems of lining up 3089 and 24, the basic problem is one of timing.
Leaving it as it is in November, so you can have your May election.
Well, that's that's catastrophic. We pass a charter in May and then have a state, in effect, a statewide referendum on the heart of our charter in November. That's no better as far as I'm concerned. I understood.
You don't like the bill.
I don't like the statewide referendum on it, no. And I'm saying, had it... I know it is. I know it is. But I'm saying, the timing, when you say timing, I'm saying very broad sense. It should have been done 2 years ago. It should not now be done, in my opinion.
Unless your charter is held under the
Constitution. No. No. We have anticipated that that provision of the charter is subject to challenge. And we have asked, and the House has passed a bill, which will come before this committee, that will give the Charter Commission and the new government the power to create special service districts within a city county. So if it does fail on the scheme that we now have, the backup for that is the power of the city county to recreate special service districts and thereby achieve a differential. Now, it, that...
Various layers of different services.
Right. A formula.
That's all, Mr. Chairman.
Is there further question, Mr. Joseph? Are there other witnesses here to testify on SBR 24?
I'd like to move an amendment to it before the members leave. To it, so that we can have an amended form. I'd like to follow the amendments. All the amendments that I suggested earlier, plus two others. Okay, that's on line 11. I think we should take out the words the and tax. And then after the word prescribed, put in the word a formula for computing. I believe that would be the sense of it. And I would move, or Wally would move all over.
All right. You've heard the motion on the amendments. Discussion, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed signify by saying no. The amendments are adopted.